Hi, everybody. Welcome to Buzzing About Romance. On this episode, I, Leah, because I forgot to introduce myself, and giving you a quick shot of romance, author spotlight edition. And on this episode, I am joined by Holly McCulloch. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. And also, well pronounced for my last name. You did that really well.
So I will say I cheated and I asked Izzy for a phonetic pronunciation of your name.
That's absolutely amazing. I mean, even McCulloch's find it difficult to pronounce. So I'm very
Well,
impressed.
so my last name, I don't say it on the podcast typically, but my last name is very difficult to pronounce. So
Yes.
my kids, when they were younger, I'm like, I apologize now because you have to spell your first name and pronounce your last name for the rest of your lives.
Yeah, exactly.
Because both of them like have names where there's multiple spellings.
Interesting.
So.
When after this is over, I'm going to go down that rabbit hole. And we
You're welcome
can,
to do that.
yeah, I'd like to know.
Okay, so Holly, as the fourth child in a busy household, Holly was often left to entertain herself. Luckily, she quickly found the world of books, and since then, she has never looked back. As a kid, Holly often went to sleep with at least four books underneath her pillow just in case she needed them, and she often did. Books have saved her time and time again. After being an editorial assistant at Headline and a book buyer at WHS Travel, Holly made the terrible decision to become a management consultant. She wrote her first novel, Just Friends, published by Transworld in 2020 when she needed to escape. Her second novel, The Mix-Up, followed in 2021, and she's currently working as a freelance editor and writer and lives in the outskirts of Oxford with her dog. She's fueled by baked goods and a need to make people laugh. So we are talking your new release, The Ick, but before we do
Yes.
that, let's get to know you as an author. So clearly, you have been reading forever. Was there a genre that you were drawn to the most, like as a kid reading?
Do you
And
know, it's
then also as an
interesting.
adult?
Yeah, so actually, as a kid, I was thinking about this the other day, because I've actually gone back. I do some mentoring on the side,
Okay.
and one of my mentees does a lot of YA, so young adult writing, and it was fascinating because when it sort of made me reverse back to when I was reading at a young adult age,
Yeah.
and I remember my sister. I remember her vividly giving me Beverly Cleary 15.
Oh, I love
That's
Beverly Cleary.
So good, so good. So I think there are kind of those key moments in my history, in my, reading scope, whatever. And Beverly Cleary 15 was one of them. And I just, obviously as the fourth kid, like you definitely kind of idolize your older siblings, don't you? And her giving that to me, she was like, "This is a good book." And then kind of from that moment on, I was like, "This is a good book. I like reading. I understand." And we used to spend a lot of time in the summer, summer holidays were so long and so boring. And so reading was really something that you could just kind of escape into. So that was fantastic. And then I've always been a huge fan, but I could never, ever, ever, ever write it because I'm not intelligent enough, or determined enough or anything. But I love fantasy books as well. So kind of Philip Pullman, Harry Potter, Discworld series, all those kind of things as well, growing up were just a huge part of my time. Also good because they were frequently quite long. And so you could really, I think, you'd go into a bookstore and this might just be, but you'd have a certain amount of money. And you'd go and you'd look and you'd sort of like go, "Oh, that looks nice." But I often also go, "Oh, that was a big one." And so I'm gonna get that one. Just because it was, maybe £1 or £2 more expensive, but it seemed like value for money. Every now and then it backfired. Yeah, because I think I picked up what's that? First World War book, and it's absolutely massive. Vera? No, not Vera. Anyway, so sometimes it backfires. It's a brilliant book, but it wasn't what I needed to read when I was 16 years old.
I mean, I'm
A
sure that
little
all of us have
intense.
picked one or two of those up.
Yeah, I've never gone back. But no, so I think definitely rom-coms, definitely fantasy. But rom-coms as a genre, for me, they're quite like low stake. You sort of know what's going to, hopefully. I like that. I like a little bit of a trope. I love a trope. I love the predictability of them sometimes. Sorry, my dog's in the background. She'll probably
Oh,
bark.
you're fine.
And I think especially at the moment, it's quite nice to have a little bit of kind of like escapism to know that everything's going to work out okay. I'm also a part of a number of different book groups as a reader. And I love discussing things that do not matter. So you kind of have these, so like last night we were discussing Cassandra Clare, and it's gonna a sword catcher, which again it's a fantasy book. But it was fascinating because it was such a sort of it was almost a bit of a boring story, but it was so nice. And everyone who read it was like, this was a really highly marked book because it was just a lovely read, and so
We like to refer to those as mac and cheese reads
I can see that. Mac
because
and
they're
cheese is,
good, but they don't, it's like the Kraft mac and cheese where it's just like you know what to expect. It's
every
like that
box tastes the
comforting
same.
like food, but it's still like a decently like written book.
And you just, I think it's, I do think that rom-coms and romance over the last kind of 4 or 5 years have taken a little serious, like they've become, as the world sort of has as well, become a little bit more serious. Or it can be because I'm a bit older and I'm paying more attention to the world outside me. But so I do also really like the fact that like now you'll also get kind of a little bit bitier, either in terms of the tone or the humor or your characters that you have in there, things like that. So I love that. I love kind of the fact that rom-coms are getting a little bit more, in general, getting a little bit more reflective of actual real life. So, but still at the same time, still having that kind of like overarching comfort about them, which I think is really nice. I like the balance of those two things.
So, as a writer, what drew you to write romance?
I don't know if you can tell this, but I think I'm a pretty funny person. And so I just starts laughing at herself. It's a terrible reflection of my personality. So like really tonally rom-coms suit me. Every now and then I'll try and write something else and it just never works. And I really, really love making people laugh, and I really love then swapping it and making people cry. Because I think the balance of those two things is really excellent. Like I think for me, reflecting on life and everything, people go through highs and they go through lows, and the way that I deal with lows is to laugh through them most of the time. And so I kind of feel as though like humor is a really core part of my personality, and so the rom-com, the romance, and the comedy, they go so well, they go so well ha hand in hand. I mean, for me, it's bizarre actually, because although this is buzzing about romance, I kind of feel as though in every romance book I read, it's not so much the romantic element that I love, although everyone loves a good sex scene, but it's more the characters and the relationship. And so for me, the romance books are actually almost like relationship books as opposed to necessarily romance books. So I guess that's kind of the overarching thing that draws me to them, because I love observing people. That makes me sound like a stalker. I'm
I
not.
honestly, I love a good people watch. Like I'm kind of an introverted extrovert. 'Cause like if you get me in my like element, like I'm good to go, but I'm not like an out there type of person, but I love to sit in people watch.
It's fascinating, and it is because people are, and I mean this nicely, weird. Like, everyone is strange. Everyone does strange things, and I absolutely am here for it. I absolutely love it. I love watching people interact. I love people, like watching people when they don't know they're necessarily being watched, and it's not from like a judgmental point of view. It's just a fascinating, like, huh,
It's observant, like it's you're
cool.
just making those observations of like when people are just like in the wild, like what is gonna happen?
David Attenborough's coming on, and
Yes, and he's like
oh.
narrating.
Yeah, exactly. Although I think my narration and his would be quite different. And he's paid a lot more than
Perhaps.
I am, which would
It's that
also be nice.
soothing accent that you have, though.
Yes.
Like,
Yeah, I reckon I could be soothing. I reckon I could be soothing. Maybe I'll have some chamomile tea. But yeah, so I think also, like I said before, I also couldn't write fantasy. Like, I'd love to write fantasy, but it doesn't suit my tone of voice. I'd love to write thriller, but it doesn't suit my tone of voice. I do think you kind of know as a writer, and you get more confident as you keep writing things. I mean, some writers can swap genres and they do a fantastic job. I do not think I'm one of those people. And as you keep writing your words, as you keep kind of crafting and you're reading and you're doing all of this kind of stuff, I think you sort of solidify yourself. You start to know even more what you're like. So there's also that thought process, and this is going slightly off topic, but
That's
it's
fine.
fine.
Just go with it.
So when you're at school, rewind. Not that long, we're both very youthful. But rewind back to school and you'll have however many subjects that you take, say you take 10, and you're terrible at maths, but you're fantastic at French, and you spend so much time working on the terrible subject because it takes you longer, you want to be able to crack it, you kind of need to do it, all that kind of stuff. I'm not sure I believe that's a good idea. I kind of feel like you should put your eggs into fewer baskets that you actually enjoy doing and that you're good at, because otherwise you're diluting the amount. If you're here for a fixed amount of time, get the maths to where you need it to be. But don't worry if you're not going to be a mathematician. You don't need to be a mathematician. You should be appreciated for your amazing French accent, So it's those kind of things. So I just kind of feel as though, if you're drawn to something, but you feel like, oh, maybe I should be doing the math. Don't just get the math off to the side. Concentrate on what you're good at. Concentrate on what you're enjoying doing, and really focus in on it. And I think that's kind of, yeah. I think you get to, as you start writing, as you keep writing, I think you develop your voice even more. I think you can really kind of like solidify what you enjoy about your own writing. And I do some like coaching and stuff on the side as well. And we were talking the other day around two things that were quite interesting. One, the idea of writing and never writing a lost word, never none of your words being wasted. So even if you end up deleting a whole book, say, or never, never, I mean, I've got three books, I think, on my computer that are never going to see the light of day. They're completed,
That's
they're
a common
finished.
theme in the
It's
author world.
exactly, and it's so easy to sit there and go, oh, what a waste of time. Like, what a waste of energy. What a waste of planning. What a waste of everything. Because realistically, we're either not getting paid, or we're not seeing our friends, or we're waking up early in the morning. So many writers work outside and write outside of their lives, or cuss away from their lives. It's a normal thing to do, but or it's a typical thing to do. And it's so easy to sit there and be like, oh, what a waste. But actually, if you view it as, I wrote all those words so I could write these words, then it to me, it doesn't feel as much of a waste. I mean, obviously, sometimes I have a really pessimistic day and then I'm just like, oh my God, give me the wine, and you just feel like sort of drowning your sorrows a bit. But overall, that's the kind of attitude that I think is probably more positive. And it, you know, writing.
I think that's a great view to have it because like you put those words like down for a reason, whether or not like they spoke to you in the way that you planned it, but that's the thing, like you wrote it for a reason, whether or not, because I don't know how many authors say like their first like book that they ever wrote is in a box somewhere under their bed, never to see the light of day. And it's like, but like so many authors, it's the same thing. And I don't know how many authors are like, I wrote 40,000 words and I wasn't happy. And so I just hit delete and started over.
And it is so painful to do that, but it is so necessary as well. It's just,
Well, it's that cathartic, like
yeah.
in the moment, like you want to cry,
Oh, you
but
do
you're
cry.
like,
I don't think it's a want. I think you have to cry.
there's a reason I'm deleting these words.
Yeah. And you know it. Like you know it. It's the same as like when you look in your wardrobe and you're like, I'm never going to wear that top. Why do I have it? I need to get it out of my wardrobe. It's the exact same thing.
But it
Just
stays there. Because you
I
may
know,
wear
yeah.
it.
You well, exactly. You might do, but you don't. But you still know that you're not going to. So yeah, it's tricky. It's really hard. It's really heart-wrenching. But yeah, cutting words, very important. Not being
So,
too, yeah.
for your writing itself, are you a pantser or are you a planner?
I am a planner.
Yeah.
I love a plan. I love a post-it note. I have, you can't see it, but behind, in front of me, I was going to say behind me, but behind you, but I have this big, what I've converted, it's a really big, probably like 1.5 meter by 2 meter picture frame that
Okay.
I've converted to a storyboard.
Oh, okay.
And it's just, I mean, that's a bit messier. So I'll just like have ideas that I want to put up, or quotes or things that I've seen or ideas or anything like that. And then I sort of collate it all together, then throw it down and organize it into different things and eventually form a plan. There's a book that I love that's called Save the Cat, writes a novel.
Okay.
It's my writing Bible and it's so good. But no, I do love a plan, and I think also, I sort of, depending on where I am, I have like a an over I normally start off with a fairly overarching plan where you go, well, this is sort of what you want to do, and this is kind of
Okay.
the theme, this is what you want the story to be about. And then you kind of plot out the bigger scene, so like your acts or whatever. And then I normally do, like, I very rarely do a chapter by chapter point at that moment in time.
Okay.
But I might have like the key things in each act, and then I'll go and have like three chat I'll try to plan out ish 3 chapters ahead at a time, because I hate, and I'm not good at it, and some people are amazing at it. Some people can just get down at their desk and just write it, and I am not that person. I'd sit down at my desk and I'd be like, what did I say I was doing? Where is my list? What am I eating this week? Like, what am I meant to, what clothes am I wearing today? Like, so I'm definitely someone who has to have that, all of that word vomit out, and then I can do it. So yeah, I think a plan is really good. Having said that, I always write my first couple of chapters with absolutely no plan. Because although I love a plan and I find great comfort in a plan, at the core of every book to me is the tone and the characters. And I think those are things that you kind like you don't plan I don't plan those. I think those have to be sort of explored.
So you plan out the story itself, but your character direction, you let it flow naturally.
Because I mean, you need to make sure that your plan and your characters are both acting in normal in ways that you would expect people to do,
Right.
or ways that you'd expect those characters to act. You'd never have a character who hates heights going and climbing a building, things like that. So that's a stupid example.
Well, it has to
So
make
yeah,
sense.
exactly. Everything has to make sense. So you might have these scenes working out, and you might actually then sit there and go, well, that scene doesn't quite work because that character actually, now that I know them, wouldn't do that. So you can sort of change it around and stuff. But in your beats that you're going to have something happen here, and you know that kind of, to get this part of the story across, you need to add them in. You know that you can't forget this character for 5 chapters because they're the person's best friend, so you need to write them, things like that. There are things that you sort of need to plan. But the characters within those scenes, I think you need to sit there and just be a bit like, well, what actually would this person say here? Like, how would they act? They're a Britney Spears fan, so they're probably not going to be moody. There's something like that.
I mean, they could be moody.
I mean, they could be moody, yeah.
It
Yeah,
depends on which phase of Britney Spears they're a
I think it
fan
does.
of.
I think it does. Also the early years. Her
So, do
greatest
you
bits,
have
yeah.
any writing rituals or habits, like aside from like your storyboard and things like that, that help you stay focused?
I very often listen to the same song again and again and again. So
Does
I
it
know that
change
sounds,
book to book, or
it does
is
all,
it the
it
same
does,
song all the time?
it typically changes from book to book.
Okay.
So it also kind of, I try to reflect ish the book, although it's normally, I often can't listen to music that has words in it, otherwise I find myself actually typing, oops, I did it again. on my script, but that's unhelpful. So that's often what I do. And sometimes I also, if I have to get myself into a mood where I am, maybe personally I'm sad, unlikely. But personally I could be sad and I'm actually having to write that day a really happy scene. I will always put on some really happy music because then I do feel as though music does really help kind of, get your heart beating in the right kind of tempo that you
Well,
need
and
it
if you're
in.
picking like an upbeat, like you're like doing that, like the bobbing and like
Exactly.
the.
But yeah, we're both bobbing in
We are, yes.
the
Well, it's funny that you say that because I was sitting next to my son the one day and I was typing something and he's like, "Do you always like move your head like that while you type?" Because apparently I like, as I type, I like shimmy. He's like, "Why do you do that?" I'm like, "I did not realize that I do that." But after he mentioned it, I was like, "Oh,
I do
I
that.
do like shimmy as I type." Because apparently I get really into like the feels of my fingers on the keys.
But I think that's good. It is like a whole body experience, though, when you really get into something, So I think that's great. And
It was just
give your son for people watching as well. I think he's starting young.
he truly is.
Yes.
So let's talk The Ick. It was
Yes.
released March 6, 2025. It is a rom-com.
It
It's
is.
enemies to lovers, but kind of, it's more one-sided enemies to lovers.
Yeah, I know. Oh, poor Alice, you've really
There
got
are
a sad
some
deal.
commitment issues. It is a
Yeah.
slow burn. So
Yeah.
what inspired the ick itself? Because honestly, when I read it, I thought of the How I Met Your Mother episode of where they find out like the quirks that bug each other and they have like the glass shattering sound effect and then they
Yeah.
can't stop paying attention to it.
Yeah, I mean that's actually a very visceral react like way to describe the ick. Yeah, really good. So it's very funny actually because in the very first book that I wrote, so Just Friends, I wrote a line in there where it was like, oh, she all of a sudden she just got the ick, and my editor at the time was like, what's the ick? And I was like, what is the ick? How do you not know what the ick is? I mean, this was like a decade ago. I mean, it wasn't quite that long ago, but it was quite a long time ago. It feels like a decade ago. And so it's just always like the actual kind of concept itself, I think, is such a strong thing. Just to get the ick is such a strong thing. But I do think in general the ick is, unless it's something really obvious, but the ick is not meant to be obvious. The ick is meant to be something stupid.
Well,
You know,
because
the
her ick, she's so the book opens up and she's on a date with Atlas, who is the hero, but the ick is because he wanted soup for
Yeah,
lunch.
I mean it's so stupid, and the
She's like,
number of
oh,
people,
the ick.
yeah, I think,
And she's done. And then
yeah,
she's just done.
she's done, but she's not. I mean, realistically, she's not done because he had soup for lunch. She's done because she's like, I could like this person, I don't want to. And the number of, you'll sit there, like, I try not to read reviews, but every now and then you'll read reviews and someone will be like, I was just, the ick was ridiculous. And I was like,
That's kind
that's
of the
kind of the
point.
point. Yeah, exactly. So I do, like, I 100% understand. I felt like 1 million percent understand the, like, him, her getting the ick because he has soup is stupid. It is. But, like, it's the whole, the kind of thing behind it, isn't it? And I do think, like, it is, speaking to friends and from your own experience and stuff, people do get the ick. And it
They
has
do.
nothing to do with the poor person that you're actually dating most of the
Not
time.
usually. Every once in a
Yeah.
while, it
Every
definitely
once in a while, yeah.
does.
Every once in a
But
while, it is
more often than
actually,
not, it's a you
yeah.
problem, not a them problem.
Exactly. But, like, if it's something completely ridiculous, then you just, it's there's something more going on
Well, and
then.
it's one of those, it's like a theme throughout the book, naturally, because I mean, there's purpose to the title. But so it's like the ordering the soup, and when he has his bag, like in his backpack, she's like, he looks like a snail because
I
it's just
know.
so big. And so, I mean, I carry a backpack on the regular. And so, but then I kept imagining like those like full body, like sleeping bag type things where he's like carrying this like giant, but like I know like that's not what it is, but the imagery, it's like this giant like 5 times the size of him backpack that he's like lugging around the streets.
You remember, like, because so in I used to live in London, and in London, and indeed, like, loads of cities, you'll get a lot of people who go to work, go to the gym, walk from home. And so once you have your gym kit, your outgoing out kit afterwards, your towel, your shoes, your computer, your lunch,
There's a lot of
your
stuff.
backpack is, you look like a snail.
Well, bit.
So, and I think it is quite funny. Like, I love that imagery. Personally, that was one of my favorite images that came out of the book, and I hung on to that. And I wouldn't try to delete it. If they had, I would have fought them for it. But yeah, I just loved it. And I loved also, because so it's told in third person, which some people didn't like, but I felt like it really helped. I liked the third person point of view in this story, narration style in the story, obviously, because I wrote it and the book's brilliant. It was the third person, but it was very much kind of like a Jem's tone. So the fact that she was like, oh my God, he looks like a snail. You can also see her humor. You can see kind of her wittiness, her tone, her biting stuff kind of come through, but also like the humor behind her as well. So she's got a lot going on. She's got a lot of commitment issues. She's very protective of her
She
mother. She's
does.
very protective of her home life. And it's the protection of her home life that I think, like, ultimately, obviously, stops her from wanting to get close to people, because she doesn't want anyone to come in that's going to, in any way, destroy that safe zone that she has, that her family have created for her, and that she's also reinforced, so it's very, I think her commitment issues are very understandable. But she's also, so I think she's there's something about her. She's smart, she works hard, she loves her friends, she's very loyal. She's a good lass. She got a bit of slack, did poor little Jen, but she doesn't deserve it.
Well, and she's also like detrimentally independent.
She
Because
is.
she stands on her own 2 feet. She's very like, I don't need anyone, because I mean, she has Shanti, who's her best friend, but she's really the one of the only true friends that she has. So she really holds ever like she holds her, the people that she cares about super close to the vest, and everybody else is on the periphery of like her circle. But you can tell as you read the book, like she wants to be loved. She just does not know how to accept it because she just feels so responsible for a lot of the things that have went wrong.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly it. I mean, I think if only everyone who read the book would have noticed all and would have had that wonderful insight. I think, yeah, you're completely correct. And like, small things like her, well, so small, it's quite big things, but like, her birthday party when her friends make fun of her mother and all those kind of things, they're really, she was young when that happened. So you might sort of sit there and think, oh, she's going to get over it. But she was young when that happened, so it was a really formative memory for her. So, even if as an adult, if that had happened, she might have been a little bit more resilient to it, and actually a little bit more kind of like, oh, that's not a me problem, that's a them problem. My friends are dickheads.
But as a kid, you take those
But as a
things to
kid, you take it.
heart.
Yeah, exactly. So you don't have that. And she's never gone to therapy, she's never done any of that kind of stuff, so everything that she's working out as she goes along. And it's not until she kind of like is forced to go out with Atlas, and is actually, I mean, he's great. I mean, who wouldn't
He
love
really
Atlas?
is.
He's fantastic. It's only until that happens, and he's sort of forced, because I don't write in the scene where he goes to see where he meets her mother for the first time. And good old Uncle Mike like walks in and forces them to come back. That to me is sort of the only way, or her being forced to take Atlas home, that's the only way that she would have really seen him in her home environment. Because otherwise, I think she just would have, especially because she was sort of dating him as a bit of a ruse, I think that's the only way that it could have, that she would have introduced them, that they would have met. I don't think if it was up to her own volition, I don't think she would have done it.
No, I don't think so either, because I mean, so when she comes home from the first date, she tells Shanti that like he has the ick, like it's not gonna happen, and Shanti, who's a psych, like student. It's like, I want to do, like, I want to add you to this study and, like, basically prove to you that the ick is not real. And she wants nothing to do with it. But then she goes home and, like, her mom is in a wheelchair and having some issues. And she's like, I need to do more to help. And so she's like, okay, let's do this. And so that is the, like, the basis of, like, her, like, going back to date Atlas. And so I will say their dates, though, were like chaos, because he would make dates, but then forget that he had other stuff going on. Like, dude needs a calendar.
He does. Well, she buys him a calendar at the end. Like, that's
She
exactly
does,
why she
yes,
buys him a
but
calendar. Yeah, I
dude
know he
needed a
does.
calendar because he
I
was
know.
constantly double booking things. And but
Yeah.
he's such a sweetheart, and he want, like, he's such a helper. Like, his love language is, like, acts of service. Like, he just
1,000%.
wants to help.
Yes.
And but I will say that outdoor tabletop game date that they went on with, like, the
Oh, yeah.
giant Jenga and,
Yeah,
like, the Twister, that was one of my favorite parts of the book. I mean, it happens early, but I just, the idea of ha well, first off, where can I get one of those? Because that would be a lot of fun. We
yeah,
don't
you
have
can.
things,
Do you
I
not
don't think we
have?
have things like that where I live, but
Oh,
I live in a
okay.
very small area. Like, I
Okay,
mean, I live
well,
close to the city, but it's, that's a drive. I don't like to
yeah.
drive.
No, we in the UK, we love a lawn game.
I
So I
do like
really
a lawn
think,
game.
yeah, so I think we've kind of gone like a lawn game and then tried to like bring the outside inside games outside and sort of like made them a little posh, but like I'm not
Well,
sure,
like,
but
we can
it's
buy, like, giant Yahtzee things, and
yeah.
they do have big Jenga sets, and, like, they have giant, like, Connect Fours, but it's like you have to buy them in individually and, like, and then
Oh.
create, like, your own lawn game chaos.
Oh no, we have so again in London, and actually a friend and I w went to this once, and they have these like little squares, and some of them are public and some of them are private, and depending on what borough you're in and the housing association, all that kind of stuff. And so her parents had access to one of these places, and they were throwing some kind of party to try and raise money for some charity, I don't know. And so we went in, and it was just all giant game. It's cool. It was absolutely fantastic. Like, it was so much fun.
It sounds a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I mean, I didn't meet Atlas there,
Yeah,
so it could have been
but you
better.
wish you had.
I wish I had. Yeah. No, that's actually a really fun scene. And no, I forgot because I did write this book quite quickly. I forgot that there's that other couple in that scene. So I named them after my sister and my brother-in-law. And I never changed their names because I mean, I kind of thought it was quite funny anyway. I was like, brilliant, I'd love to have my name in a book. Absolutely fantastic. And then my brother-in-law messaged me and was like, I'm getting up to this scene. And I was like, oh, cool, great. And I didn't really know why he was messaging me. And then he was like, you named the couple Juliet and Tom. And I was like, the competitive couple. Yes, I did. You're correct. Completely correct. Yes. And it had absolutely nothing to do with you. And I was like, it does 1,000% because they are very competitive whenever they play games. Really funny, but I totally forgot that I'd done that until he messaged me, and I was like,
That's
oh,
really funny.
yeah. Anyway, it did
I
make me
will
laugh.
say, like, when it comes to games, I'm very competitive. We were not those people that let our children win. Like, they had to win fair and square.
It's good,
And
it's important.
there's always some gloating by anybody who wins. Like, there is equal opportunity gloating. We were on a sorry kick for a while because I think Giant Sorry would be an awesome game. Just throwing that out there. But we were on a sorry kick for a while, and my son won, like, four in a row. Not cool kid. But then I beat him. Oh, it was
Sweet.
glorious. Glorious. Yeah.
Yeah, we've got a big family holiday coming up this year, and I'm a little worried about the game and competitiveness of it. It's either going to go really good and we're going to have a great time, or we're never going to speak to each other again. And I can't, the line between that is very, very fine. So we'll see how it goes.
Throwdown for
Yeah,
tabletop games.
exactly.
So the story, like, it progresses, like, they go on these dates. One is a little more chaotic than the next at times. And but then Atlas does find out about what like the ick study essentially. And I mean, you have the third act breakup, which I appreciate because not everybody has that anymore.
It's I think it's really interesting because I know that there's quite a lot of discourse around it, around whether people want it anymore, people think it's like too staid, all that kind of stuff. And I kind of feel like if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. It depends a lot on the story. I feel as though Atlas, he wears his heart on his sleeve.
He does.
He's a pretty sensitive guy,
Well, he has
and
some heartbreak in his past.
exactly, so it's not without reason. Not that you need a reason to be heartbreaking and amazing. But he, I was like sort of contemplating and reflecting on this. And I feel as though he would be really upset that, the reason that they had continued going out was really not for him. Even though it was, even though it was, but it sort of on the face of it wasn't, because he would, of course you would, of course, like, of course you're going to be upset that someone that you were really getting close to kind of actually only started seeing you and kept seeing you because, for a reason outside of your own personality and outside because she actually wanted to see you.
Well, it was like this forced like visitation almost.
Exactly. So so kind of going back to the tropes and everything, it's kind of enemies to lovers, but it's sort of not enemies to lovers. It's sort of what do you call it? Forced proximity. Which, I mean, I would love to be forced to be proximity to it's Atlas. No, but I mean, I say no, but yes. But yeah, so I do understand the discourse, and I don't think that you necessarily need to have a third act breakup in every book.
Yeah, I
But I think
agree.
it works for this story. So yeah, I think if it works, it works. If it doesn't, don't put it in. It's nice to have a mixture. As long as everything ends happily, we're fine.
And that's the thing, like there, like you said, there is a lot of discourse over it, and I think the younger like generation of romance readers are the ones that don't want it, but like as an older reader, like I'm so used to it. And I think that sometimes like when authors don't put it in, like they don't know how to end the story, and then it kind of drags on. But there are a lot of books that I've read where they don't have it and it works really well, but there's always some sort of like outside force that like creates that third act chaos and drama, because
Yeah,
like you need something.
you
But that's the thing,
do.
like you don't necessarily need the breakup, you just need something. But I
Yeah.
think this one, if they hadn't had the breakup, it wouldn't have rang true to this like the style of the story, because during the breakup, Jem, like she has like she faces a lot of hard truths, and she gets some advice and like recognizes that a lot of her issues are like,
You can be mean.
well, I can't think of the word.
Stupid? No.
Psychological. That's the word I was looking for. Well, I mean, a little stupid, but it's all psychological, because it was like it was just her mom and Mike like against the world for the like the longest time. And it's like her mom like was in the accident, and then so she kind of like she didn't shut down, but she had to live her life a certain way because of like,
She's protective. She's very protective.
yes. And so I mean, yes, a little bit stupid in some of her choices, but honestly, who isn't?
I mean, we're humans.
Yes.
We're growing, we're learning every year. If we came out fully formed and knowing exactly everything that we needed to know, what would be the point of life? Like, we'd
That
have
would be
a very
boring.
boring life. It'd be so boring.
Yes.
Yeah, and I do. I mean, my only sort of concern with the ending is that actually I kind of feel as though she, it's quite a lot for her to learn in quite a short amount of time. But so I kind of feel as though even afterwards she would probably have some issues going. Like I don't necessarily think it would be easy, smooth sailing between for her all the time. But I feel like Atlas is a loyal enough person that he would sit there and be like, "I'll just,"
Well,
and he's sort of
and
like, I mean, he's emotional, but he's not erratic in his emotions. Versus I think Jem is probably less emotional but more erratic, and so they'd sort of level each other out.
Yeah, I well, but honestly, what relationship is smooth sailing? And if you claim your relationship is smooth sailing, you are a big fat liar. Because it there like there's no smooth, like there's chaos, there's fights. Like if you are in a relationship and you say you never fight, there's problems there.
Exactly. And yeah, I think again it goes back to creating realistic characters. And so But I liked the I liked ending on a birthday party scene. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed kind of like coming up with that. I thought that was quite fun.
Well, and it kind of brings it full circle because, like, Jem has this moment, like, with her mom and Mike, and they're talking because her mom likes to always have these big, elaborate birthday parties for her. And
Loves to
her big
celebrate.
thing was, I just want the people I care about the most. And so it kind of, like, really emphasized, like, these are the people who are, like, the best part of her life.
Exactly. And it's again, it goes back to that core group of people. Like, Gemma is never going to be the person who has loads of friends because she can't trust that many people. You know, she'll freak out a little bit, but she has that core group of friends. She doesn't need anybody else. She's, like you say, she's fiercely independent. But I think it's really nice for her to find to have found Alice.
Well, and he brings her out of her shell a little bit, but not enough that she's uncomfortable. And he definitely, like, her comfort zone is shaken a little with him, but in the right ways.
Yeah, and I think that's it as well, isn't it? It's like the people that you go out with are the people who challenge you, but not in a way that makes you uncomfortable. They challenge you in a way that makes you grow. And I certainly hope that Atlas would do that and Jem would do it back to him as well.
So what's next?
Well, so really badly, at the beginning of this year, I had a mental breakdown because I was like, not literally, so I shouldn't take that in such a lighthearted way, but I was so panicked. I was like, what am I going to do with my life? What's happening? All this stuff. And so I've really concentrated actually on just working at the beginning of this year. And then I have sort of July, June, where are we now? We're May. So I've got like
We're
July,
in
August,
May.
September. Yeah, sorry. I just looked at my
It's
calendar as well.
fine.
I don't know where Alice got it from that he couldn't have the right dates and stuff. So I've got some time off to do writing over the summer because I think the rest of your work kind of like quietens down then. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. I have a vague plan, but it's only vague at the moment, so I won't go into it too much detail because otherwise I'll get panicked about it and I'll never get right written, and then I'll just be like, "That's
So
another
things
book
are
that I've."
coming, you just don't know what.
I just don't know. I just don't know what I feel. I feel as though I would love to write another rom-com book. I have a number of different ideas in my head, and it's trying to work out which one will
You want to
be.
flesh out the most.
Yeah, exactly. So I think I've got about four or five ideas at the moment that I'm sort of building out, and just try and like hone it into one, or decide which one you want the most. But we'll see. And until then, I'll just continue reading other fantastic rom-com books and just kind of have a nice summer of reading, which is fantastic.
Sometimes it's nice to step back and take a break. I mean, there are so many authors who I've talked to, like, they're like burnt out. And it's like sometimes you need to take a step back and like care about yourself for a while.
Yeah, so last year I wrote kind of two books last year. Basically, I wrote The Ick and another one which hasn't been published. Will it? Hopefully, maybe one day, I don't know. And so there's quite a lot of like a bit juice that goes into those. Juice is a terrible word to use, but you know what I mean. And so yeah,
The
it's gonna
creative
be
flow.
exactly, yeah. Cheese. So it's been really nice to kind of take a step back from it. I love writing. I love writing.
But it's
And
draining.
it is draining. And I think I'm definitely also someone who is very good at being concentrating on one thing. So I'm not someone who's very good at like picking something up and writing 500 words. I'll pick something up and I'll spend 3 days looking at it, and then I'll write 2,000 words a day for 10 days. Like that tends to be how I work, as opposed to, really diving into something. Because otherwise I'd just get too obsessed with it. I just say so obsessed with it. I don't know why I put that tone on there. But you know, you do, but you become your books, you know, you become your characters. You're thinking about them all the time, you know, they become your friends. You kind of like, you're out to dinner and you're like, oh, where's Jen? She's not here, weird. You know,
Yeah, like
and
you
you're
really
and
immerse yourself in like the world you created.
yeah, I think so. Which is probably also another reason why I wouldn't write fantasy, otherwise I'd be like, where's my dragon? Where is
Wouldn't
he?
that be
Not
so
here.
cool if like a dragon just showed up and you could like fl I because I dislike driving, and if you know me,
But you
like I
fly.
oh goodness, no.
I
There's
don't
no
know.
flying.
I just wonder if you'd
I
fly
have
on a
like a
dragon.
5 minute like bubble that I really enjoy. Like, 'cause my like where we live, like my kids' activities are they're close. We're very fortunate. Like we can stay in our bubble. Well, my oldest started playing baseball and the field is 15 minutes away. It is outside of my bubble, and I'm like, oh man, I gotta drive all the way there. And people
My
look at me
bubble.
like I am insane. I'm like, I like my bubble, people. Don't mess with the bubble.
US. You have to drive everywhere in the US. It's too big.
I mean, I live in a really small town, so I technically don't. Like, my town has like my specific borough that I live in has 2,500 people.
Oh,
Yeah. So like I
wow.
can walk to my grocery store. Like
Oh, that's so nice.
yeah, I mean it's like a 20-minute walk, but I can walk to my grocery store. Like I like we have a I can walk to the Starbucks actually because they just opened one. Like I have a
Fancy.
great coffee shop that's like down the street and has some of the best coffee. Like I don't have to leave the
Yeah.
bubble and
You don't
everything
have.
gets delivered to me, so why would
Yeah.
I don't need to. But yeah, so
Yeah. It's the comfort, isn't it? Yeah.
oh yeah. Well, because I
Yeah.
am a small town girl at heart. Like I'm in the city compared to what I grew up in, so
Wow.
yeah.
Fascinating. Well, no, but also I think, you know, the more modern and the more modern and the more frenetic life gets, the more I certainly want to run away and live in a small hamlet somewhere. You know, so you really get back to kind of that community sense and that sort of simple life where actually, you know, you're not always every day seeking something big to happen. It's like today was a good day because, you know, the sun was outside and I got to see my favorite oak tree. You know, I do have a favorite oak tree, by the way. It's fantastic. It features quite a lot on my Instagram. I had to stop taking so many photos of them because I was like, well, like, again, this is the same oak tree. And I was like, yeah, it's beautiful. Anyway, yeah, so it's really nice to be able to just like simplify your life and appreciate everything, find the joy in the little things. I think
It
that's
might be the
lovely.
same oak tree, but the squirrels are different.
And also different seasons. So it's really come into bloom recently. It looks absolutely fantastic with all of his little oak tree leaves. Beautiful.
I mean, I can appreciate an oak.
I'll send you a photo. It's a really good tree.
Okay. I would like to see that.
It is a really good tree.
Well,
Sorry.
thank you so much, Holly, for coming by the podcast. It has been an absolute delight. Like, I have had so much fun talking with
Yeah,
you.
me too. I'm sorry I ended on such a weird note, but I mean,
Oh
style it
no.
out.
That is
Yeah.
not the weirdest thing we have ended on before, so don't you worry. An oak tree
Fantastic.
is very calm compared to
Oh,
some of the
good.
things we've ended on. So you are just fine.
Fantastic.
And until next time, happy reading, everybody.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.